Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Bucks host the Saints in Sunday Night Football. I've been waiting all day for Sunday night, and it's Florida-Georgia week. Dan Mullen has been playing the role of the villain, like he did a week ago, but isn't it time for him to finally win a big game for the Gators? We'll talk college football with Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Verstick. Hey, Breitling Boutique and International Plaza, well, they're only one of 15 in the United States, so now you've got to go and check out their gorgeous Swiss timepieces. I'm telling you, these watches are absolutely beautiful. You will walk out of there with one, I promise you. There's the Chronomat Bentley. That's one of my favorites, stainless steel with his gorgeous green face. In April, they launched the Super Ocean Heritage with the 57 limited edition. They have welcomed championship quarterbacks, Hall of Famers, championship boxers as clients. But guess what? They treat everyone the same when they come in, and they'll treat you like gold too. All you have to do is tell them that Rick and Steve sent you, and you will get a free $60 Breitling cap when you just try on one of these beautiful Breitling watches. I have to warn you, though, you'll probably walk out with a watch as well. So go check out our friends at Breitling Boutique in International Plaza. All right, Steve, it's the biggest game of the year, and I would argue that Sunday night's game between the Bucks and the Saints will be their biggest game since 2008. And why do I say 2008? Because they were 9-3 with the best record in the NFC at that time, and they were going to Carolina, who was also 9-3, to play on Monday Night Football. It was John Gruden what turned out to be his final year, because they got lit up in Carolina that game and went on to win or lose three more games, lost their last four, narrowly missed the playoffs, including a loss to the Raiders and Jamarcus Russell back in the day. And 3 weeks later, John Gruden and Bruce Allen were fired. And that's how we remember. But that's the last time this football team, I think, played in a game with this much national attention. And for that matter, you know, they have a chance to take over with some, you know, I mean, we still got half the season to play, but take over the NFC South.
Well, they'd be a game and a half up, and you split the series with the Saints if you win this game.
That's right, which is huge, because if you, you know, the goal, of course, is to win a division. You need one more win than the Saints, assuming that, you know, nobody else comes up and they start losing or something. But you don't want to have a season sweep to them. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be swept by them, because then the first tiebreaker, of course, is head-to-head. So you could match their record. They could go 13-3, and you could go 13-3, I guess, and you would still be a wild card football team. You don't want to do that. So that's why this game is so important.
Yeah, if you lose this game, you're a half game behind the Saints, because they have not had their bye yet. Or they've had
their bye. You have not. Yeah.
But you're essentially a game and a half back, because you've lost a season mm-hmm. series.
That's right. Now, you know, I will say this in the Bucks' defense. If you recall, it was week one coming mm-hmm. off. No preseason games whatsoever. Tom Brady, unfamiliar with the offense, still very unfamiliar with the guys that he's played with. You know, and at full speed. I mean, it's one thing to be out at Berkeley and then in training camp or whatever they were doing. Nobody's hitting you. It was a surreal stadium. It was empty. We're in a COVID era. They had not traveled. They had not played a game in that scenario. It was a sterile environment. They had to generate their own energy, and Brady didn't play well. He had a pick six, a couple interceptions, and you know, he struggled against a football team that if any team was going to start fast, it was going to be the Saints and the Chiefs, and teams that have been together with the same coaching staff, the same coordinator, Sean Payton, Drew Brees forever. And so, you know, they played not that great on offense. I think Brees had 160 yards passing. Alvin Kamara was shut down by the Bucs defense, but the Bucs had the pick six and a couple interceptions. They also had, I think, a field goal block, as I recall. They muffed a punt, I think, and so they didn't play well in two of the three phases. I thought the defense played okay, and they got beat. But this is a much, much different and much more confident Bucks team this time around. However, You know, the Saints have kind of been muddling along, and they've managed to eke out some wins, including one last week in Chicago against Nick Foles in what was an ugly game, much like the one the Bucs played, except they won. And they have been without Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders during this time. Sanders hasn't played since the opener, since the Bucs were there, for COVID, for an injury that he had. Guess what? They're both back. They're both back, it appears, for this Sunday night game. And Alvin Kamara has just been on fire. I think he is either the first or second guy in total yards, both rushing and pass receiving. He can do it all. Again, they shut him down in the first game. But this is a potent, suddenly potent New Orleans Saints offense. And the defense has always played well. I mean, I think that's been one of the real unsung heroes of this Saints team for several years now, is their defense is pretty darn good. So this is a classic game here, Steve. And I'm thinking that it's going to be one for the ages, because you've got Drew Brees, you've got Tom Brady. You don't know if these guys will ever meet again. But there will be some fans, at Raymond James, I think around 16,000. The atmosphere, national TV again. They haven't played well on the road in national TV. This is their first home game on national TV with Brady. So I'm expecting them to come out and play their best.
You know, the receivers in this game are very exciting to think about. I mean, if Thomas Sanders are back for the Saints, you got Mike Evans, of course, with the Buccaneers. I don't think Chris Godwin's going to play. Mm-hmm. But you've got Antonio Brown joining the mix now with Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And, just that something. The offensive firepower these two teams can play when they're at full strength or close to should be exciting. Although, as you said, the New Orleans defense doesn't get enough credit over the last few years. Mm-mm. And I would say, the Bucs are one of the best defenses in the NFL this year. So
yeah,
it's kind of – you could see scenarios where this is a really high-scoring game or a really low-scoring game.
Or a low-scoring one, yeah.
It's kind of hard to figure out which way this may go. And, it may be – if the defense can force some turnovers, it may keep it really low. If not, it may be a little higher scoring, and it's kind of hard to tell. I'm excited for this game. This is, look, you got two teams both at essentially leading the division, 5-2 and 6-2.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever team wins this game is basically in control of the division,
right?
Whether the Bucs are up a game and a half or the Saints go up a half game with
no
the
doubt.
Season sweep, so it's almost like a 3-game swing, mm-hmm. essentially, in as far as this game goes. I think, and have to wait all day Sunday for it. Now, the Bucs have not played well in primetime, and that's another thing. Granted, they've both been on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a factor in that? Will the home fans help that? Obviously Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are used to playing primetime games, but this Bucs team mm-hmm. as a whole isn't. So it was some of that part of those other two games where they struggled on Thursday night and Monday night? I think we'll find out more on Sunday.
Yeah, and I make sure there's some good matchups. I mean, Mike Evans is starting to come back to shape with that ankle, but he faces Marshon Lattimore, who has given him fits over the years, mm-hmm. and it's been a great battle. Some Evans has won, some Lattimore has won, but you add somebody like Antonio Brown to the mix, and that's a dynamic player in this league, and he seems to be in good shape. His energy is going to be high. Bruce Arians has said he could play anywhere from 10 to 25 snaps, just depending on how the game goes, how many times he's in that role, whatever role that might be. I think we're going to see a lot of them. I think that Brady trusts him, even though he's only played one game with him with the Patriots, last September. But from what I understand, he's picked up, the offense fairly quickly as to what they want him to do. And in talking to Sean Payton, Payton said the tough thing about playing somebody like Brown right now is they don't know how the Bucs will use him. They don't have, he's being integrated back into Bruce Arians' offense with Mike Evans, potentially Chris Godwin, we don't know, and Scotty Miller and Rob Gronkowski. So, he has the ability to play all three positions. How are you going to be able, to cover him when they shift him around, move him around, go into different formations? Your defense is going to have to respond and account for both Evans and Brown. You can't double everybody, so maybe that creates opportunities for Gronk. Maybe Scotty Miller gets more one-on-ones. It's going to be a problem, and just having him on the field is going to be a problem. So, when he played the one game, I think he was only, in practice for 2 weeks with the New England Patriots, and they played the Miami Dolphins. In his first game, he had 5 catches, including a touchdown. They just absolutely waxed the Dolphins that day, 43-0, I think. And so, he had instant chemistry with Tom Brady. A couple of his catches came on third down. So Brady feels comfortable playing with him, and I think you'll see him, you know, make a difference in this football game. If nothing else, he could create some opportunities for guys like Evans and any other receivers out there. So it's a big game. And then defensively, you know, the Bucs did not play that well against the Giants. They were kind of leaky in terms of their run defense. We talked to Todd Bowles, who said they weren't driving guys backward. You know, their pad level was a little high. You know, too many running backs were falling forward. They kind of cleaned up some of their run fits. They got better in the second half, and the combination of the rush and the coverage created a couple turnovers and interceptions of Daniel Jones, and that's really what sort of once again sparked the offense, which was unable to get in the end zone the first half. Then all of a sudden you have the interceptions with Carlton Davis and, you know, Sean Murphy bunting, and they cashed those in. So I think the defense is pretty confident. They're going to have to try to stop Alvin Kamara, though, and they were able to do that. They had Vita Vea the first week. Again, their defense played pretty well, I thought, in that game. But Kamara has taken it to another level, because remember now, for the last 3-4 weeks, he's been all they have. You know, they've got a good tight end. They've got some other receivers, but no one, you know, can go in there and sort of replace Emmanuel Sanders and all those guys. But, you know, Kamara can do it in the run game. He's a devastating pass receiver. You can create matchups with linebackers, with safeties. And the only thing I'll say is I think the Bucs are well-equipped, you know, and I wrote about this, or we'll write about this on Sunday in the Tampa Bay Times, but I think they're well-equipped to kind of neutralize Kamara because of Devin White and because of Levante David. Those two linebackers are so fast. They're good in coverage. They get guys on the ground. They can run sideline to sideline, and they'll move Kamara all over the field. But I think whether it's, you know, putting a safety like Winfield on him, the key is, in talking to Bowles, is you can't try to tackle him with one guy. You need to get a lot of hats to the ball. And if they can duplicate what they did in week one, which was, I think, 10 carries for 17 yards, and I hurt them a little bit as a receiver, they would be happy with that. So it's got to shore up their run defense. Is still the best in the NFL. They did give up 100 yards to a rusher, you know, last Monday night against the Giants, but I look for that defense to bounce back, and I do think that the atmosphere will help them. They have struggled on the road, whether it's national TV or not, in dome, in stadiums, dome or otherwise, that just don't have fans, and it is a problem. You have to generate your own energy, and I think, you know, for the 15, 16,000 that will be in-house on Sunday night, they'll certainly be hyped about it. It'll feel more like football, even though it's not a sold-out 65,000-seat stadium. It still matters. It still matters to be able to feel energy from the crowd as opposed to piped-in noise or anything like that. So should be a good one at Raymond James on Sunday night.
I think there's one more thing I'll be watching, too, is the offensive line for the Buccaneers. If Ali Marpet cannot play with the concussion, this will be the first game they've gone into with one of their offensive linemen not starting. And how I think the Bucs' offensive line has performed very well this season, a lot better than I anticipated. And I think there's a lot of reasons. I think, one, they're playing with a lot of confidence. But, two, and we've talked about this, with Tom Brady gets the ball out so quick, it helps your offensive line, makes them better. But they've also run blocked a lot better than they have in years past, too.
Yeah.
How they deal with that, you know, how they deal with that with their depth, and I don't think there's a ton of depth on that offensive line. So if Marpet cannot go Sunday, I am curious to see how that offensive line works together.
Yeah, and I mean, their options are they can take Joe Haig, who has played guard. He's been playing that extra tackle position, coming in, you know, in tight end situations. He can play, probably the most veteran, the most experienced. And that's why he's on this roster, because he has the versatility to play inside or outside. So I could see them using him.
But then what do you do with that extra tackle? What do you do with the extra tackle if he goes to guard?
Yeah, so you don't have the tackle eligible guy coming in three tight ends. That's true. You lose that. But, you know, this guy's going to play every down if he plays a guard versus the 12 snaps or so. So I think you would find a way. They got Anthony Eclair back, which helps them because he's their blocking tight end. Which is one of the reasons I had to use Haig in the first place, because Brait and Tanner Hudson do not block well. So with Eclair back, I think they can kind of get away with it, and maybe they put another tackle out there if they needed to. But I kind of look for him. I'm leaning. I think maybe they'll go with Haig. We'll see. You know, they're gonna. You're right though. When you've had five offensive linemen, and it's rare to get five guys to play every game, it certainly helps your continuity, and that's how you get really good. And Marpet, for the five guys that are playing, is their best offensive lineman. He's been the most consistent. He is in concussion protocol. It is possible that the independent neurologist could clear him for Sunday's game. But at this point, as we do this podcast, I don't think that we should expect to see him play. So should be a great game and a very big game. And look, that's why Tom Brady's here. He's here to get you into big games, number one, on national TV against the division rival. And if you want to be the best in the NFC, you're going to have to beat the best in the NFC. And that's been the Saints for the last three seasons. They've taken the crown. Well, you got to take it off of Drew Brees' head. So what better chance to do it than in front of Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth and the boys? So that'll be something really to watch.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, Matt Baker joins us now, and Matt, it is a huge game in the SEC, huge game for Florida, obviously. Florida, Georgia, these two teams playing for what is likely a spot in the SEC title game, I would imagine, barring some further upsets. But let's start, before we break down that game, with some of the things that happened on the field with Florida and Missouri last week. You and I have talked about this a little before the podcast, but you know, Dan Mullen kind of got into the middle of some stuff, as did his team after a late hit on Kyle Trask. And, you know, some shenanigans ensued after that. Just what was your view of that? Sort of as you've looked back on it, what really happened in that game?
Yeah, so my view, obviously, I'm watching in the press box. It's the end of the half. I'm kind of starting to write or whatever. And I look up. I did not see the hit on Kyle Trask live. I didn't. I was watching the ball. And then I look up and I see a guy in white and with a white visor. It looks like he's charging the field. I'm like, wait a second, that's Mullen, and he is ticked. And then I keep my eyes on Mullen, and then clearly he's upset. And then you see what's going on elsewhere, and there's some starts to a shoving match. It looked like a mosh pit from my angle. It's reminded of my high school and early college the concerts I went to. There was a lot of shoving. I couldn't tell who was doing what. And then you look and you see some punches, and it was ugly. And then all the players go in the locker room, or they're headed that way. And then Mullen is still ticked, and he's got to be restrained by his staff and his security again. And finally, I'm on Twitter like, what the heck happened? Because I just didn't see it. And then you see the hit, which I thought was at best questionable. I think it was on the dirty side. And then you kind of start sorting through the fallout from that, and you know, Mullen pumping up the crowd afterward was very interesting on his way out of the field, and then he comes back for almost like a curtain call and pumps him up again. And then after the game, wearing the Darth Vader costume again. This is such a bizarre thing that we have to do right now because of COVID and everything. And I'm not complaining on how I do my job. This is just a fact. So I'm working. I'm writing in a corner of the press box somewhere. And I'm not looking at Zoom because I'm waiting to hear him come in. And then I just say, okay, what do you got? And then I look, and it's Darth Vader on the Zoom. I'm like, oh, okay, what is some Gators security guy or some Gators SID or something doing his dress as Darth Vader? What's going on? No, wait a second. That's Mullen. What the heck is going on? And it was so surprising and disarming, or I was thrown off. And I mean, he's to his credit, I guess, he's literally accepting his black hat, black helmet villain role that he's taken upon himself for the last couple weeks. And I don't think he cares that's who he is. I think he kind of enjoys it.
You know, it was bizarre to me trying to figure out what was going on, because I did see it live from the telecast. I didn't have to worry about writing stories on Deadline and things like that.
Lucky you.
Yeah, that day. Had mine on Monday night, thank you. But it was just weird. You know, it's one thing to protect your players. You should always do that. In fact, his teammates, Kyle Trask's teammates, should have done that. You would expect it. But the fact is, there's a really big football game this weekend, and you don't want to get players ejected if somehow, instead of pulling guys back to your sideline, you're kind of charging forward. That was the weird thing to me, Matt, was that it didn't seem like he had much control of himself, much less his football team.
So there's a couple things here. I don't think Florida played particularly flat in the first half, but they certainly came out a lot sharper and played a lot better in the second half. So mm-hmm. I think some of it might have been firing up the team. Sure. Mullen was asked after the game, what were you doing? And he said that he was trying to do kind of what you were saying, where, you know, the big game next week, don't want any of these guys in trouble, got to kind of separate it, you know, from what yeah. That is certainly not what I saw in the press box. And that doesn't explain why, when things were done or on their way to being done, he came out and had to be restrained again. So I'm not entirely buying what he said there, but you are certainly right that there were risks associated with trying to start something or starting something or having something start, whatever agency you want to use there. If a game that's such magnitude coming up this week against the Bulldogs.
And we don't necessarily have to dwell on this, but the fact is, if he had a mask, it was down and he was screaming at people. And in a COVID era, that's not what you want to do or the example you want to set in terms of getting in guys' faces and whatnot.
Let's talk about that for just a sure. second here, Rick. Just because I saw this on Twitter, I can't remember who I'm stealing it from, but I am. You look at colleges in general and you compare that to the pros. The pros have done, here the last couple weeks especially, I think they've done a much better job of making sure people are wearing their mask and holding them accountable. Specifically, I'm talking about coaches here and holding right. them accountable. Sure. Whereas in colleges, there hasn't been as much of that. I've seen a lot. This is just anecdotally from what I see in the games I'm at and what I see on TV. It seems like colleges are being a lot more lax in terms of wearing the masks and what have you. And that kind of goes against the way it should be, because college coaches are supposed to be leaders of men, right? And set the yeah. example. And I don't think that by and large, they're doing a good enough job of that. And believe me, there's enough still pictures I see on our website and elsewhere that of examples where that's not going on. So anyway, I just thought there's a little tangent there, but that's something that's been on my mind.
No, and I don't disagree with you. I think you should be trying to set the example, especially for younger men that aren't getting paid. And you know, Dan got fined $25,000, not for that, but for sort of what went on there. So obviously the SEC didn't like that example. And it's just the other thing, you know, okay, it was Halloween, the Darth Vader deal. I mean, does Dan Mullen want to be viewed as the villain? Is this a role he's trying to carve for himself out, either with his football team or the SEC? Or is it just what we see in college football where, you know, the head coaches are sort of the stars of college football in as much as these players change every 2, 3, 4 years?
I don't know that he wants to be the villain necessarily so much as he's okay playing that. Mm. No, I was thinking about it earlier. He's in some ways kind of an accumulation of he's got a lot of coaching influences, right? I think in a lot of ways he acts like Urban Meyer, and because obviously his boss for a long time in terms of what he says and how he conducts himself to the media and
sure.
And that sort of thing. But there's also some Spurrier to him. I mean, he wears a visor because of Spurrier is what he's always said, and obviously he's not alone in that. But there's definitely he does some Spurrier type things where he is not afraid to needle rivals. You know, at Mississippi State he always referred to Ole Miss as the school up north. He did some I think kind of funny ways to troll them with like their if they won, you know, 14-7 or something in the Egg Bowl the next year, the spring game attendance would be 14,007. You know, they would do stuff like that just to kind of needle those guys, and because they could. And we've seen that to some degree at Florida, where, you know, referring to the Seminoles as the Semis like Spurrier did. So I think there's some of he's having fun and needling. But then you look at some of the other things that he's done the last couple of weeks. Obviously, packing 90,000 at the Swamp. You know, some people think that was irresponsible and crossed a line. I think, again, just taking my personal opinions of that out of the way, I think one thing he was trying to do was to say, hey, look over here. Don't look at my really bad defense that just collapsed. Don't look at this devastating loss we just had on the road to Texas A&M in a game that we probably should have won. Look at this 90,000 comment. So I think that's what he might have been trying to do there. And it worked. And if it means that he's wearing the black hat or the black helmet, then so be it, because it's doing what he thinks is best for the program. Because at the end of the day, you know, he'll have to deal with whatever recruiting fallout there is, but I think he'll be able to justify that in a living room or Zoom or whatever it is. What matters most, though, is whether they win or they lose. Not how good of a person he is, nothing like that. Nick Saban is not a teddy bear, but he's the best in the business and probably the best ever. And that's ultimately how he will be judged at the University of Florida. Did he win? Did he lose? Not what did he say about the swamp? Did he wear a Darth Vader mask? It's fun. It gives us something to talk about. But at the end of the day, that's not what matters.
Well, and along those lines, Dan Mullen and the University of Florida Gators need to win a big football game. And this is one facing them right now, this weekend. They're playing a Georgia team that has a tremendous defense, has a pretty good coach in Kirby Smart, has taken Alabama to the brink before, still looking to win an SEC title with, get back in the game and win that with Kirby. And here come the Florida Gators, and this is his opportunity. I mean, this is a huge game, and I think Matt will break down this game, but college football is about putting points on the board. And if there's an advantage in this game, it's that the University of Florida can do that.
Absolutely. You know, one other thing on Mullen here, we talked about this the other day, but if he wants to be Vader, Vader was scary and he was a villain and all that stuff, right? He also lorded over a galaxy. And spoiler alert, what did do at the end of Return of the Jedi? He overthrows an empire. He overthrows the emperor. So if we want to talk about Mullen and Darth Vader, beat these guys. Then we can talk about an empire. Then we can talk about what you're really doing here. And I think this is his best chance to do it. I wrote last year, and I already regret it, that I thought 2019 was going to be his best chance to do it, just because of the roster composition and recruiting and a lot of reasons that made sense at the time. But looking at it now, I think this is his chance. You know, you look at the way the pandemic, I think, hurt that Georgia more than Florida, and just specifically on the field here, because they didn't have the spring with Todd Monken to put in his offense. You know, their top quarterback, Jamie Newman, opts out. The next most talented guy, JT Daniels, hasn't been healthy and hasn't been playing. The next most talented guy got benched. So they're down to their fourth string quarterback. You look at the way their defense is banged up. Richard LeCount, one of the best couple safeties in the country, he's definitely out. They've got other injuries and other defensive linemen out. A bunch of guys questionable, banged up. If you were to kind of script a movie here for what you would want to happen for the Gators to have a good chance, I think it looks like this, especially when you look at some of the other matchups. Alabama's passing game is really, really good. Their receivers, as of a couple weeks ago, were better than Florida's, but Florida's still pretty good. And you look at the way they were able to pass for 400 yards and four touchdowns on this Georgia secondary, and then you take away Georgia's star safety. You can talk yourself pretty easily into Florida finally winning, and in fact, I did. We just published something a little bit ago on our website why I'm picking Florida to beat Georgia this year.
The Gators' defense, I thought, and I don't know how good Missouri is offensively, but they seem to come to life. They seem to be flying around a little bit. They'll have to do that again. You're right. Georgia is down to their 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, quarterback in Stetson Bennett. They do have Todd Monken, who people with the Bucs should be familiar with as former receivers, former offensive coordinator, and he's had some pretty good quarterbacks, even 1 year with Baker Mayfield in the Cleveland Browns. So, is there anything that still bothers you about the Gators' defense that somehow Georgia could possibly give them some trouble offensively?
Yeah, because I watched the first three games too. You know, I was at the fourth one, but I also watched the first ones. I remember the Ole Miss receivers running open in the secondary. Yeah. I remember how the Gators could not tackle in the first half against South Carolina's big back, and how they allowed Will Muschamp to go on a giant drive at the end of the fourth quarter because they couldn't get off the field. I remember how they couldn't tackle Isaiah Spiller for A&M, and how they continued to get picked apart in the middle of the field in the secondary. So those are things that still happen. Now, I do think the Gators made some adjustments in their COVID 2-week layoff that have helped. Obviously, there's been personnel changes. The big one being Kyrie Campbell, defensive tackle, coming back to the middle of that defense, which lets some of the other guys move around. Zach Carter moves around, and Britton Cox, 5-star, goes from DeAnda Moore outside linebacker. So there's some personnel changes, and I think the effort was better and they tackled better. But I think a lot of what we saw on Saturday was a product of Missouri not being great, more so than the Gators defense being a lot better. So I do think there were improvements, but I'm not there yet. I'm pumping the brakes a little bit. I just don't know that Georgia is going to be the offense that can take advantage of it.
Yeah, so you've got the Gators winning this game, and I don't know that I disagree with you, but it seems like if they're going to do anything, going to reach their goal and try to get into the SEC title, this will be one that they'll have to have. We've got some other action, of course, around college football, and a couple conferences came to life after their long layoffs with COVID. We saw some action over the last couple days. We can talk about that. And also, the Pac-12 is back as well. Is there a team, Matt, even in this abbreviated season, even shorter maybe than the Big Ten, where, you know, a team in the Pac-12 could sort of capture the country's imagination and force their way into a Final Four playoff?
It's going to be tough just because they're playing fewer games. I think it's six and then the title game, if I remember right. It all blends together. But I think if it's going to happen, it'll be Oregon. You look at their defense, I think they're going to be really good. Kayvon Thibodeau, DN, was one of the top like one or two players in the country a couple years ago. He came on strong at the end of last year. He has All-America potential. Jordan Scott from Pinellas Park in the middle of that line, he's definitely a next-level NFL guy who's been, you know, kind of all conference on the fringe of that all conference list the last couple of years. And then you add in Joe Moorhead as offensive coordinator for Mississippi State head coach. I think Oregon's going to be pretty darn good. USC is still fascinating because they have a lot of talent, but they haven't put it together in a while. And Clay Helton's like that eternal, he's the Jim Harbaugh of the Pac-12, right? Like, is he going to get it together? Is he good enough to stay? Is he bad enough to go? When he's right in that Goldilocks zone where he's neither. So USC is a really interesting program to me in the Pac-12 as well. I guess I'm interested in Washington State without Mike Leach. Nick Rolovich is an interesting dude. After he got hired, he at one point said like, "Hey, I'm in Pullman or whatever. Where's a good bar to go to? All right, I'm at this bar. Anyone who wants to come talk Wazoo football, come meet me." So he's his own beast. But I'm jumping up from Hawaii. I don't know how well he's going to do. But you did mention the Maction. So I'll give you two quick Maction highlights from the other night.
Absolutely.
Just because they're local here. Antonio Nunn, the receiver from Buffalo. Buffalo's a pretty darn good G5 team. I think they're probably going to win the MAC. Antonio Nunn, receiver from Jefferson, had a great touchdown catch in the bowl game. I think they were in the Bahamas Bowl. Then started off with a very nice touchdown catch against Northern Illinois and a big win the other night. And then one of the other big storylines I'm watching in the MAC is Robert Wiener, who was the Plant High coach, obviously had a ton of success there, state championships, Aaron Murray, all that stuff. It was his first game as the offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator at Toledo. All he did was win 38-3 and put up 500 yards of offense on Bowling Green.
Not a bad debut for him. I think he's going to do well, and I saw enough of him at Plant when my son was playing for East Lake, and he can call some trick plays as well, so he's perfectly suited for the MAC, and I think he's going to win a lot of games up there for them with that offense. We've got some other games around the country that are interesting, to say the very least. Clemson at Notre Dame, still without their starting quarterback. How does that one pull out?
It's going to be really close. Nobody knows because Trevor Lawrence is obviously one of the best couple players in the country. DJ Uiagalelei is a very talented quarterback, and I mean he's going to be the next Trevor Lawrence type guy or Deshaun Watson. I don't think that's too high praise. He's really really good, but it's his second start, and it's at Notre Dame, which is a really good team with a pretty darn good defense. It's a very tricky spot for them. I don't have a great read on it. I could see it going either way, but I think the matchup that's going to decide that is Travis Etienne. He's the player who's going to decide it for Clemson. Now, if I had to do a Heisman ballot today, I think Etienne would be number one on it just because he's so dynamic. And the best friend for a quarterback in a situation like DJ is going to be in is a good run game, or a guy, especially if that running back can catch passes, just little screens, dinks and dunks, and then, you know, get 70 yards out of it. So ETN to me is the guy to watch on Saturday to see if Clemson's going to be able to stay perfect against the Irish.
ETN already the ACC's all-time leading rusher, which is really something. Michigan's at Indiana, and I only mention this because Jim Harbaugh lost to Michigan State. That was not a good loss. There are no good losses for Jim Harbaugh, particularly if it's in the state of Michigan or that team up north, you know, with Ohio State. Look, Indiana has done some interesting things. They got some local kids. How much trouble could Harbaugh be in? How much trouble is he in now? And if he loses this game, I would imagine somehow the heat's going to get turned way up.
Yeah, Harbaugh is in such a weird situation because he has this year on his contract and then one more after that. College coaches don't get into that situation. They're either fired beforehand or they're extended, because when you're in that limbo like he is now, the coaches can use that against you in recruiting. Oh, look, they don't believe in him, or maybe he's going to go to the NFL, and, you know, there's all that type of stuff. So he's in that weird no man's land to where I don't know what his future is. I think it would be hard to see Michigan getting rid of him this year, the more I think about it, just because of the optics and the finances and everything. And maybe they just rather let next year play out. If he does well enough, they give him another shot. If he doesn't, then he walks. But Indiana is absolutely good enough to hang with them. I don't know why they're not. They beat Penn State. They beat Rutgers, which beat Michigan State, which beat Michigan. So, you know, and you look at Michael Penix, the quarterback from Tampa Bay Tech. It's really good. They've got good receivers. Wap Fillier from Plant. Defense, I think, isn't too bad either. I don't know that I'm going to pick Indiana to win, but I would not be surprised at all if the Hoosiers knocked off the Wolverines. And then we're talking about, 1-2 Michigan, where the one win was against Minnesota, which might not be good.
Right, Minnesota struggling, and that would be quite a win, quite a day, I'm sure, in Bloomington. That'll be interesting to see that game. Any other games you got your eye on, Matt?
Cincinnati-Houston? I mean, I think it's time to start really talking seriously about Cincinnati as a playoff contender. Matt, you look at the way they smoked, who was at Memphis a little bit ago, they smoked SMU, I think it was. They're a really good team with a really good defense. Desmond Ridder, I think, has played quite well at quarterback. They absolutely deserve to be in that conversation, especially with this weird year where they're going to play more games than your Pac-12 guys or something like that. I'm curious to see. I think Penn State is going to beat Maryland, but I'm not sold on that either. So there's a legit chance of Penn State maybe falling to 0-3, which is crazy. Florida State and Pitt, I don't have a good read on either of those teams. I just don't. But what I want to see from the Seminoles, I want to see what sort of progress they're continuing to make, especially after the open day, and especially on offense with Jordan Travis, whether he can continue to progress, especially passing, to the point where he might be the quarterback of the future, as opposed to Purdy or Rotemaker. And then looking just ahead a little bit, kind of at the night shift, any chance you get to watch Coastal Carolina, top 20 team, they're a lot of fun to watch, and it's fun to watch the rando schools like that. And then finally, Arkansas and Tennessee. Felipe Franks is coming to the Swamp next week, which is going to be a really weird thing that we'll talk a lot more about next week, I'm sure. Absolutely. But I just want to see how he's continuing to progress as Arkansas's quarterback in that Kendall Briles offense.
Certainly helped Arkansas to get him in the fold there as a fifth-year senior, so that's going to be interesting for sure. He's Matt Baker, and he will be doing yet another Florida-Georgia game. You want to check that out on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times. As always, Matt, thanks so much.
You got it. Thanks, Rick.
Big college football weekend. Really looking forward to the Florida-Georgia game, and my thanks to Matt Baker again. Bucks versus Saints, Sunday night football. You've been waiting all day for Sunday night. You know you're going to love that game. It's a prime matchup in the NFC South. The winner will probably win the division, I'm guessing. And so the Bucs with a rare chance to go 7-2. How about that with Tom Brady? Hey, folks, make sure you visit our friends at Breitling Boutique. You know they're in International Plaza. It's only one of 15 in the United States, and you've got to check out these beautiful Swiss timepieces. Check out the Chronomat Bentley, which is one of my favorites, a stainless steel, and the Super Ocean Heritage, especially the 57 limited edition. Try on these watches because, believe me, you're going to want one. Put it on your wrist and see how it looks, because that's what is worn by Hall of Fame quarterbacks and boxers, and they got all these great athletes and celebrities as clients, but you can be one too. They're going to treat you as good as they treat anybody, and all you have to do is tell them that Rick and Steve sent you, and get this, you will get a free $60 Breitling cap just by trying on the watch. So go see our friends at Breitling Boutique in International Plaza. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.